Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So the U.S. has finally come to the conclusion that having 2.2 million people behind bars is too many. We've reported that on the program quite a lot lately. There is a consensus to reduce that number. And so beginning on Friday, as part of new guidelines from the U.S. Sentencing Commission, 6,000 prisoners will be released from federal prisons across the country. Should we all buy guns? Are halfway houses and treatment programs ready for this? Or will it barely be noticed in terms of community tranquility? The state of California has some experience here. Responding to a judge's order to relieve overcrowding, the state finally started a public safety realignment program in 2011 to reduce the number of people in state prisons, releasing some and shifting others with shorter sentences to serve out their time in county jails. Based on that program, Californians went a step further in 2014, passing Proposition 47, expanding the first realignment and releasing about 18,000 offenders. Magnus Lofstrom is a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California. He's part of the state monitoring effort to see how a release of this scale affects community safety.
We looked at county-level data to see how the number of offenders on the street, if it had any relationship with crime. We looked at state-level data, compared California to other states, and we really didn't find any evidence that violent crime went up as a result of 18,000 additional offenders on the street. We did find an effect on property crime. It was driven entirely by an increase in auto theft.
Do we know, based on the California experience, how many could be released? I mean, what if President Obama said older prisoners, we could release them tomorrow? It doesn't matter what crime they committed. I mean, 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds, 55-year-olds. Let's talk about beyond nonviolent drug offenders. This is the low-hanging fruit, so to speak. What if we reduced it by 10,000, 20,000? If we're going to use the California example, 18,000, what if we went to 60,000 nationally? Could we do that?
It all depends on, are we looking at the federal system, which holds about 200,000 offenders? 60,000 is a big drop. It does. I think it greatly and importantly depends on who we release. And if one were to focus on these older inmates who are 40, 50, or 60, they're very unlikely to commit new crimes. So that would be a strategy that would put less upward pressure on crime trends. What we've seen in California, we are kind of in the middle of the pack in terms of our incarceration reliance. And at that level, it didn't have much of an impact. So if you have the states, if we shift our focus over to the states where most people are incarcerated in state prisons and county jails, if we focus on those, there are a number of states that have very high incarceration rates. And if you made some changes to a state like Texas, for example, and you had a reduction on the same order of magnitude as California, wouldn't expect much of an impact on crime at all.
Is the lesson, you need to release a lot more? Is that the public policy lesson? Or as we go down this road, is the lesson, hey, folks, look what's happening. We're already seeing police discouraged from being aggressive in law enforcement. Now we're seeing prosecutors discouraged from prosecuting because they're not going to be able to get convictions, and we have overcrowding, and it's not going to be tolerated anymore. And all of these effects on law enforcement and prosecutors feeling like they've got to slow down, that's going to have the impact on increasing crime.
We looked at this from a cost-benefit perspective to see if what time of crime preventive savings do we get from incarcerating someone. And we estimate that at the incarceration rates we're at in California, the crime preventive effect of locking up someone in state prison for an additional year, that additional offender, it prevents 1.2 property crimes, and these are auto thefts primarily, per year. And if we use some numbers on what is the cost to society of auto thefts, it puts it around $9,000. And so that's about $11,000, $12,000 in terms of the benefit of locking someone up at the incarceration rate that we saw in California at the time. The cost of locking someone up in state prison in California, which is very expensive, is around $53,000. So the crime preventive savings on incarceration is only about 23 cents on that additional dollar spent on incarceration. That tells me then that, yes, we can further reduce our reliance on incarceration. And what we should do, though, is not just focus on that, but we need to think about, well, if there are savings from these efforts, where should we put those so that we can combat the upward pressure that will be put on the crime trends as we reduce our reliance on incarceration?
Do we need to be prepared to tolerate some change in the way our communities take on these big issues?
I don't think we should accept that public safety would be challenged. I think what we need to do is just thinking about what are the efforts that we can put in place as we're moving in this direction that will counter the effects of the reduction in incarceration. I think that it's important to recognize that a release policy will have an impact immediately on the prison population and reduce some overcrowding problems there. But unless we change how we send people to prisons, we're not really solving that in the long term. So that means that it means that we have to come back and take a look at how we sentence people and how, when, and why do we send people to prison.
I have to ask you this because a senior corrections official said this on the program that I thought was so perfect and clear. And it was, you have to decide who you're mad at and who's really bad. That's the essential question of prison reform. And that the people that you're just mad at, you have to be able to suspend your emotional response to whatever it is they're doing and focus on the people who are real threats to the community. Can public reform policy on criminal justice, some of the preventive things that you've talked about, and incarceration make that distinction in your view?
I think so. I think we need to take a look at exactly that. It is who is it that we're sending to prison and what are the reasons behind that? As I said before, our experience is that since we've gotten to this point of a high incarceration reliance, the folks that we are locking up, those additional offenders at those higher rates, they're not particularly criminally active. It's not a particularly good way to allocate our resources. But again, as we move downward, if we reduce our reliance on incarceration, we're moving slowly towards the point where you're getting some of those offenders who are the bad ones, who need to be locked up. There's no doubt about that. There are people who need to be locked up, and we need to figure out how we effectively can determine who they are.
Magnus Lofstrom is a senior fellow for public policy at the Public Policy Institute of California. Thanks so much, Magnus.
Thank you.